From Sydney to LA, from LA to London, I'm Rachel.
I'm Sophie.
And for one final time, this is G'day from GOTB. Well, we're back, finally, from what a long trip it has been. Can you actually see us over his ears? We thought we'd bring him in the shot, but we're thinking maybe it wasn't the best idea.
He's taking the limelight.
Entirely. What we're doing, he's also shedding, so if you see just bits of floating hair, that is him. We are also doing our final episode of G'day from GOTB. We are trying to marry these two media together. Will it work? Only time will tell. But if you are listening to the podcast, you can head over to our Instagram to also watch the video. Talk about multitasking. Anyway, Sophie, we're back.
We are. We're back. We're home. Forgotten what it looked like.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of thing where you feel like it was absolutely ages ago that we went to Sydney, which it kind of was, but also feels like it's flown by.
Yeah, it feels like it was yesterday as well.
Yeah.
So much has happened.
So we've been thinking about when we're going to do our final episode of G'day from GOTB. It's partially us being lazy, partially a lot of stuff going on, and we were like, let's wait for the dust to settle. And don't blow the hair into my face. Let's wait for the dust to settle. And it just seems that with the Spanish Federation on fire, the dust is not settling. So we figured, you know what, we're back in London. Let's do it now. Yeah. Let's chat. Let's chat about the tournament. I'm sure we will talk. Hi from Spain. Well, we will probably talk about Spain Joe Watson, because you can't not talk about everything that's going on in Spain. But where have we been for the last week?
We were in LA. We went to an Angel City game.
We did.
We didn't go to LA for the Angel City game. My sister lives over there, so we went to see her on the way home, see her and our nephew. So we popped in and, yeah, luckily fell on a weekend that Angel City were playing at home, which was a really, really great experience.
And they were playing OL Reign, which is quite cool as well. So of all the fixtures to get to, that was pretty cool. And the only downside is I feel like we just about started getting over the jet lag, and then we got another plane and came back to London, and now we've just started all over again, which is typical. But shout out to Art of Football, perfect timing, because our amazing... I'm not going to say it out loud. Mary Earps shirts. Listening to the pod, head over to Instagram to check out these great shirts from Art of Football. Probably the most memeable moment.
Yep.
Of the World Cup.
I've saved the GIF. It's been used for everything. So anything that irritates me, the GIF is being used.
Mary, love it. So our tournament, in short, what, over 38,500 miles covered? Yeah. That's excluding our little trip beforehand.
To put that into context, that's what we normally travel in a year, just in like terms of domestic football. Yeah. So, yeah, to do that in 1 month is pretty ridiculous.
Ridiculous. 14 live games.
Jamie, you do need to buy that shirt.
Jamie, get the shirt.
It's worth it.
I think we should all wear it.
Yeah.
14 live games. We did 38 podcasts, excluding this one, yeah, which will make it 39. 10 radio/TV appearances. Well done, us. You wrote 38 articles for The Guardian, which is absolutely ridiculous. Are we going to put him down? Is he getting too much in the way? Can you make your own way back into your bed? Do you mind? Say bye.
Just say bye. Bye-bye.
This is Scotty saying goodbye. He's been quite attached, as you may imagine, since we got home. And he also interrupted our little rundown of the content we did, so thanks for that. We might end up having to put him into the sitting room. 38 articles for The Guardian. I don't know how I have any words left.
I don't think I can write anything else for a while.
It's kind of why we didn't do as many lives, because I think after matches when we'd come home and I'd have done a podcast and Sophie would have written like two articles, we literally had like just no words left. How do I get it? It's amazing. It's great when my boss gets on my nerves. Yes, Jamie, Art of Football, go onto their website. They sell loads of cool stuff, including this, obviously. Great shirt. Hold on, the bunny is about to go up a step on his own to see if he can get into the sitting room. So if you hear a little bit of scrabbling, it's him. He's not being brave. So we had a pretty fun tournament. I hope you enjoyed our content. Thank you for all your lovely comments and stuff. We've enjoyed it.
Yeah. How do we think about what's happened since? Like, how would you reflect on the tournament?
One of the best World Cup. Amazing. I feel like the underdogs were the story of the World Cup, which I really enjoyed. I don't like being wrong very often, but I really enjoy being wrong about 32 teams in the World Cup. Really excited about the future of football. from all of these countries. So that was quite a nice thing to be wrong about.
Yeah, I think it was one of the most special, I said it before, one of the most special moments of our lives, I think. Just the incredible impact that we saw out there, the way that I think it probably didn't come across maybe for people back home, but the way that Australia and New Zealand embraced the football, the crowds, the fact that you had, you know, so many tens of thousands of people going to games that weren't Australia playing or weren't New Zealand playing. Mm. That's always been the problem in the past. If I remember back to France 2019, you know, you would get a really good crowd for a French game, but you would...
The other games
really struggled, like England, Scotland. You would think, you know, that would generate a big crowd, and it got 13,000 or something. Yeah. So that was a massive difference this time around. I think they did such a good job of embracing the tournament, selling the tournament to people, and I really, really hope that they use it as this, like, the foundation for a legacy, because we've seen what can happen over here when you win a tournament. They didn't win it, but they made such a big impact over there that I think hopefully they can turn that into the lasting legacy for the
They game. Had like a third of the population watch the England-Australia match. Like, that's crazy. Do you want to help him into the... She's going to help him into the sitting room. He's old. He's 11. So there's one step, but, like, we're on tiled floors, so it's a little bit with him jumping up in there. So he's very kindly helping Scotty back into... If you missed it, Scotty the Rabbit was with us at the beginning of the podcast, taking up most of the screen. So we were asked there which team we would have liked to see more of. So I think probably the downside of this tournament, from off the back of a Euros in England, where we could see a game a day, we saw, I think, all but one team during the Euros, was that the country was so big, so it limited quite a bit how many teams we could actually see, which is maybe a little bit frustrating. So I think just in general, it would have been nice to have seen more teams. We should calculate how many teams we actually managed to see. But that probably would have... I would have liked to have just seen more teams live, right? But I think we did as best we probably could, given the size.
Yeah, It was... At the beginning, I was kind of thinking, do we try and do more games? Do we try and fly, you know, every other day and see different... And I'm so glad we didn't, because, I mean, it was a tiring tournament. I have to say that it was such great fun, but very tiring, and I don't think we could have done any more in terms of the travel.
Yeah, I think we probably underestimated how tiring even, like, an hour and a half flight is. I would rather drive in a car for 3 hours than sorry, everyone's loving the shirts. Art of Football, guys. We'll put it in the copy underneath the...
Someone just asked how much it was. I think it was about £30, but I may be wrong.
You bought them a while ago, didn't you?
As soon as
they came on sale, we ordered them. What else? So, okay, let's have a look at some of our, like, standout match for you. Could you pick one?
Oh, I think the one I had really great fun at was the France-Brazil game. And I think it was slightly, like, because the pressure... I wasn't really working for anyone other than ourselves during the game. So it was a really nice game just to, like, absorb the atmosphere. The Brazilians really brought it. The game was just ridiculous. I mean, I don't think they knew how to defend either team.
So transitional.
It was so transitional. So it was like, I think there was one point in that second half where the ball literally went, like,
it was
up
like
and down and up and down and up and down. And then eventually they scored. And it was just one of those, like, really fun, absorbing atmospheres that you really got into. So that was probably my... stand up then, but then I also loved the England Australia game. The noise in Stadium Australia, obviously the result for us, but, like, I just think the whole thing around that game was... it was a really good game as well. So
yeah, I was gonna say that one, and also Ireland Australia, despite not winning the game, it was pretty cool for it to be the first game, for it to be Ireland's first game, and for the fans, because where I was sitting and shooting from on the pitch, I had the Irish fans all around the back of me, so that was probably a standout one for me. Standout goal?
Indi Cavada against Germany.
The footwork.
Yeah, the footwork, the finish. It just showed everything that she's about. And at 18, to be able to do that on the biggest stage of all.
The composure. I've got a picture of her in the Colombia-Jamaica match of just, like, about four players just around her. And that's the only way you can mark her. Hers was really good. There's an Aitana Bonmatí goal. That is definitely up there. And obviously, we've got to give Katie McCabe's goal a shout out. To score your first goal in a major tournament, to do it like that, it's always going to be special, but to actually make it a proper special goal. Who is the breakout star of the tournament? Great question.
This is a hard one because I think it was actually one of the tournaments where we've seen the most number of breakout stars, both in terms of like the young players coming through and standing up and you know, doing maybe what some of their more, I don't know, more experienced colleagues were not doing in terms of impacting the games. But then also in terms of players that maybe hadn't made a name on the world stage before, maybe a bit older, but were still producing really good, you know, good performances and standout. I think for me, I'm going to be boring and just say Linda again, Linda Caicedo. I think, you know, we've all talked about her for so long in terms of what she was doing for the youth career with Colombia and what she's done over the last year. But I think to be able to translate that, and Salma, to be fair, into producing like she did, they did on the world, like both of them did on the world stage, is incredible.
And Brucht as well for the Netherlands. Esme was very good. Salma Paiuelo was fantastic. There's been quite a few.
But I think it shows how much potential there is coming through in the sport. There's definitely not like the pool is there. You just need to tap into it. And, you know, you look at Spain and you look at the likes of, like, Vicky Lopez coming through. You know, she's played in the under-17s, under-19s. I think she was in the under-20 World Cup as well last year. She's still so young. I think she's 17 years old. What they've got coming through in that system, in that Spanish system, in terms of the youth, they hold all three World Cups. It's incredibly talented, the pool. And, you know, I look at England, and I went to see England under-17s against Spain in the under-17 Euro qualifiers a few months back. And that group of under-17s for the Lionesses has so much potential about them. You can already see how talented they are. They just need to have the right, you know, structures in place to get them to develop. But the potential is there.
Yeah, and I think we've talked in the past on previous various media articles, podcasts about, you know, loading and all that kind of stuff. And one of the big issues was that the pool of players wasn't big enough. And I think what's really exciting is clubs around the world are going to have looked at that World Cup and be rubbing their hands together and thinking there are so many players in continents that maybe we haven't paid enough attention to before that could be lifting the game worldwide, which is quite exciting. That pool of players is massively growing. Standout team. I'm going to say Australia. I was impressed with their journey. I think having to play without Sam Kerr for much of the tournament would have been a huge blow. And I think they did really well. I think they shrugged off that defeat to Nigeria really well. I think they managed the expectations against Canada, which they had to win, really well. And they produced a great performance against England, a really exciting game against England. So I was quite pleased with how they performed.
I think it's hard to pick one because there were so many different, like, not individual performance, but individual performances of different nations.
Like games.
Where they stood out, like you look at Nigeria and what they did against Australia and against England as well. I know they lost, but like the performance they had, Colombia and the way that they got to the quarterfinal stage made history. You know, so many nations were making history like they've never done before, and often on the back of, you know, not having the right structures in place to really perform at their best level, and the fact that they did and still made history for me is like super inspiring, and it's hard to pick just one. I think there were so many like little microcosms of stories within the World Cup.
Yeah, I'd agree. Non-football highlight?
Oh, we had so many things going on.
The Penguins. Yeah, we did the Penguin Parade on Phillip Island just outside of Melbourne. And I was sitting there going, this is going to be a lifetime memory, watching the Penguins go to bed.
I have another one as well. It was after we went to the Equality Summit, which was the day after the semi-final. And that was so inspiring. Met Billie Jean King as well.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that's up there.
But then in the evening, we joined Matilda's Active for a karaoke session.
Karaoke.
And I was just like, I don't do karaoke. Rachel does. So I was just sitting watching and listening in the bar.
She did get on stage, by the way.
I did get on stage. I don't know why. But I was just thinking, like, when I was growing up, I love football and I love the game of football and the sport of football and the tactics. And I never really considered the social side of it until, you know, the last few years. And the fact that we were all in a bar with a bunch of Australian fans, the other side of the world from where we live, just having fun together and, you know, football being the thing that brought us all together in that moment was quite special.
That's a lovely one. I would also say whale watching. All the, like, animal stuff was great.
Yeah.
Doing Uluru, if you ever go to Australia, I would highly recommend. It was incredible. But I agree, that was a very nice moment. Someone asked, the most disappointing team we're most disappointed in, probably Germany. For Germany not to get out of their group.
Yeah.
Like, I think you probably would be more likely to put money on the USA not winning than Germany to not get out of the group. Yeah. I think that was probably the biggest upset, surely.
I think Brazil for me as well, because they look so promising in the last year or so. You know, they play some really exciting football.
Mm.
And they just didn't perform to the level that they could do.
And Canada. Someone said there. Yeah, Canada was really disappointing.
I'm not so surprised by Canada, though. Not because I don't think they've got quality. They obviously do. But I do think everything around the Canadian team that's happened in the last, you know, year probably does have an impact. And I know some others were able to rise above it and the Canadians weren't. But I still think I wasn't as surprised as maybe I was about Germany or Brazil.
Yeah. Fair, that is fair. Someone asked what our favourite stadium was. I really liked Brisbane. I think we did the most matches in Brisbane and mm-hmm. Stadium Australia. But Stadium Australia was so far outside Sydney that it was an absolute pain to get to. Brisbane was a really nice stadium. The volunteers are great throughout, but the volunteers are great there. And you could walk back to your hotel, back to the centre of Brisbane mm. in like 25, 30 minutes. And I really liked, what was the name of that street outside of it?
Where the Caxton Hotel was.
Caxton Street, yeah. So there was like a street of bars and a hotel that everyone kind of took over before and after the match. So I'd say that was my favourite, I think.
I did like Melbourne as well.
Melbourne.
It's a nice stadium.
Yeah. Also centralish.
Yeah, and it was in amongst all of the other like sporting places, so you had like
tennis.
The MCG was just over there, and then the tennis was the US Australian Open was around as well.
Yeah,
so it was like a proper complex.
Yeah, that was a nice one as well. Like city wise, I think we probably enjoyed Brisbane the most as well. I think the fan zone there was one of the best. Although the one in Sydney was huge, like just the vibes of the Brisbane fan zone was really nice.
I said at the very beginning, I think it was very like Sheffield. In the Euros, the way that they embraced the tournament, it was maybe a smaller city than London or Sydney, but like the way that they took it on board, and you know, we went to the fan zone to watch Sweden against South Africa, and I just remember we had the seats at the front and suddenly looking behind and it was just completely full behind us. So I think they really embraced the game.
Helen asked, do we think teams relied on older players too much? Canada, Sinclair and then USA Rapinoe. I don't know. I think
you always get these stages, right, where you have the changing of the guard.
I also don't think the USA relied on Rapinoe. She really got much time, and she wasn't great.
But like, there's always going to be a time where these players come to an end of their cycle. It just so happens that, you know, in women's football, a lot of these players are the same age or around the same ending of their career. And it just seemed to happen all at once. It certainly made me feel very old, you know, the fact that Sinclair and Rapinoe and, you know, Marta are all, you know, they're not going to be in a World Cup again. And that's pretty much been my life to date, has been watching them in World Cups. So it definitely makes me feel old. But I think you saw so much potential with the people coming through. Juliet's did announce her retirement today, international retirement. There's so much, you know, potential coming through. You look at America, the USA, you look at the likes of Trinity Rodman and Sophia Smith, and you think what they can do in the next 10 years for them. So I think the problem for coaches, I think, is that in major tournaments, you can't just have 23 newbies. You have to have experience. And we saw it with England last year at the Euros. You know, she had to bring Jill Scott. You know, Jill Scott didn't have the best season of her life before that. But the, what she does for that, that group of players who've not played in major tournaments before, or very many major tournaments, is she gives a sort of a grounding. And I think that's the most important as well.
Mm.
So you do, I don't blame them for taking Sinclair or Rapinoe. I think they had to go. They bring a level of experience that, you know, can really ground the younger players, and because tournaments are hard. They're hard for everyone.
Yeah,
they're hard for players. You
it's
know?
Not just on the pitch that you're trying to manage. It's the fact that, like, you're away for so many weeks.
England
it's such
were
an intense environment.
Weeks.
Yeah.
Like,
so you need those experienced heads in the group as well. Especially like the USA have 14 like players making their major tournament debut, which is crazy, but gives you know. I think it was Susie Rack who said it about the USA, is that in the past the USA was able to go through transition and still be better than everybody else, and they're not able to do that anymore. So they are going through transition because everyone else is starting to catch up. You know, other teams are able to massively capitalise on that. So there's kind of like going through the main highlights of the tournament, I think, here and there. Some people have asked about like Arsenal or the domestic season. We will do another one ahead of the season starting in a month's time. This one is just more of a World Cup wrap-up, if you like.
I wouldn't panic about, not that I know anything, of course, but like I wouldn't panic about the transfer window. Like, I know I've seen a couple of things on Twitter going, they're not signing people. There's still a month left, and I wouldn't put it past them to do business.
Here's your words of wisdom. Just everyone calm down is what she's saying. The start of something, but on and off the pitch, women's football finally started to get recognition it deserves. Yeah, I feel like every major tournament is another massive stepping stone. And I think all the stuff going on with Spain, as awful as it is, I also think that there's going to be federations out there that are going to say, we can't be doing or getting away with what we've been doing. That, if anything, it shows the strength of players when they come together. And it's sad that generally when you see some of the most beautiful parts of the women's game, which is when everyone comes together, that the way they've done is often off the back of something really negative, which is such a shame. But it reminds you what a powerful community women's football is. And I know there's frustration as well about the fact that all eyes are on Spain and other federations have had problems coming into this World Cup. And I guess a lot of that has to do with the fact that this was front and centre in front of cameras for the whole world to see. And what's weird is people are still questioning it, which I think is crazy. Like, if you're questioning what happened when you're looking at it with video, you can understand how hard it is for people to get their heads around things that are being, I guess, reported without visual evidence, if you like. So what I'm hoping is that this will be a stepping stone for other federations to improve and buck up, because I think the whole lot of them have to go.
I think I said it to someone else on Twitter as well, is that, you know, the first thing is it was on the global stage in front of all the cameras. Mm. That was why everyone, like, beyond women's football has taken notice of it. I also think it's, you know, it's something that in different forms, in, like not exactly the way it's happened, but the misogyny and sexism, it happens throughout society in every single country you go to. And it's bringing it to the fore and putting it front and centre of the conversation, and the way that we talk about it and the way that we deal with it. And it's important that that we have these conversations and we try and figure out the best way forward, because it's not right and it shouldn't be continuing until you don't want it to happen on the global stage like it did, but it's actually, you know, really...
Someone said, what's the positive part of it?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the positive part of it.
I think also when, you know, we think about the last 15, a lot of people within women's soccer were talking about it. So, you know, WOSO journalists were talking about it and fans were talking about it. No one was really talking about it outside of women's football. And you had something that like that where 15 players were saying, we don't want to play, we can't play for this federation while the structures that are currently in place remain in place and we need change, and not very many people outside of the smaller inner circle really listened, and that's why nothing was really forced through or done about it. So the fact that now you've got like literally the whole world listening is huge.
Yeah, and I hope that, you know, because I remember seeing people saying like about Nigeria, Jamaica, Zambia, oh, why are you focused on the football? Why are you talking about it now? And it's like, well, no one's going to listen after the World Cup. And I think the last 15 showed us that when there's not spotlight on these issues, they're not talked about. And people keep mentioning in the comments Serena's speech, and I think that's a really good example of a moment where you're using your platform to highlight the issues and to ensure that we don't stop talking about the issues, because it is kind of our responsibility to ensure we're highlighting these things. And you know, it was highlighted even before the last 15 years ago.
Vera had to basically ended her international career over it, because you know she stood up against the then coach and his abusive behaviour, and she was never picked again, and that ended her international career. She's one of the most talented Spanish players from that age group that Kim was coming through, and it saw the end of her career. So it really takes a movement, I think.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that we continue to talk about it, but that it is another kind of catalyst to change things, and to change things for other federations, because I hope other federations are looking at Spain and going, yeah, that's not the way to deal with this stuff. Like, Spain is literally the example of how not to do, how to completely, like, burn your whole federation to the ground. It's the most bizarre reaction. I think that's what made it worse, because a lot of media that don't normally cover women's football were kind of trivializing it and saying, like, it was just a kiss. It was the straw that broke the camel's back. This is the thing. It wasn't just the kiss. There were so many other things below that that have happened before and that are happening since. And it kind of exemplified the issues in the Spanish Federation. So it was so much more than just him effectively assaulting Jenni Hermoso. And all the other players, by the way. Like, I was shooting this and I was like, why is he like manhandling and snogging everyone's necks? It was so weird. But yeah, yes, it needs to be a movement, not a moment. Exactly that. That's a great point. And I hope that it is. And I hope that it does impact other federations and they make changes as well. So hopefully that would be a positive thing, I suppose. Right, that was a good like little wrap up of our
World Cup, people have been asking about Vera as well.
Oh, Vera Powell.
Yeah.
Yes, good point.
Yeah, big news in Ireland. Contract not renewed. I am not at all surprised. Sitting in the press conferences towards the end of the last couple of press conferences, you got the very strong vibe that things weren't great and that she probably wouldn't be continuing after the end of her contract. You know, the way that they battered aside the questions about her contract, and you know, players sort of didn't really express their full support. Not that they should have been put in that place in the first place to do it, like they were sat next to her, but it just didn't come across as a huge surprise to me that she's no longer the manager of Ireland.
Yeah, I think the FAI could have handled it an awful lot better. I think if there hadn't been a World Cup, that maybe they would have been a bit more upfront about the fact that they weren't going to extend her contract. And I wonder if it's around all the stuff that came out of the Athletic, etc., and the allegations made against her, and which she has vehemently denied. But I do wonder if it was around that, and had there not been a major tournament so close to all of this stuff, that it might have been slightly different. I think what the FAI did wrong was just staying silent. They could have very easily maybe put a pin in a lot of these questions had they come out before the World Cup and said, we're going to discuss we're going to park the contract negotiations now. We're going to focus on the World Cup and we'll pick it up again when it's done. Instead, they said nothing, and it meant that there was a void left, and the only access people had were players. So a lot of players were then put under that kind of scrutiny and having to answer these questions that maybe they weren't prepared to answer, and also shouldn't have to answer because it's not really anything to do with them. So it wasn't handled well. And Vera Powell has come out saying that they'd reneged on their offer, which is interesting, because whether it was a verbal thing, I don't know, but I'm sure that there's going to be more to the story.
Yeah, I would imagine there is. I think, you know, you can both be very, you can look at her time, her 4 years in charge of Ireland, and, you know, they've come an awful long way in that 4 years, you know, from not qualifying for tournaments to, you know, getting to a World Cup.
And performing well.
And performing well. I think they, yeah, it's, but I think you maybe have to park it at that and go, that was her time, and now it's time for someone else to come on. And the FAI have to take their time over this. They have to look forward and look at the right manager to take on the role. They can't just, you know, they have to be ambitious, because Ireland's stock has gone up. massively. The way that they performed on the world stage showed that they have the talent, that they just need more support around them, I think, building the structures to keep it going. But they have to be qualifying for the Euros. There's no two ways about it. They have to keep this. For that to be a legacy, it has to be more than one tournament.
Yeah, and I think the next manager will show their statement of intent.
Someone just suggested Bev Priestman, and I've actually said the same. I've had conversations where I was like, she'd be quite good.
Yeah, her, Pia Sundhage is now out of her role. Yeah. Brazil, you've also got Lars Sundgaard from Denmark. There's another one. Do you think that the US have given up? No, they've not given up. They're just in transition. They will be back, and they will be back with a vengeance. So I think that's not something to necessarily worry about.
I just think, like, we're so used to seeing the US so far above everyone else that it kind of comes as a shock when they're not. The rest of the world has caught up, quite rightly. You know, they've invested. They're still going to invest, you know. There are going to be other nations that start to invest even more, and maybe by the next World Cup will completely surprise us all. So I think it's just, you know, it's not that they've necessarily given up or gone backwards. There is like a levelling of the playing field, pardon the pun, because it's, you know.
It was always going to happen.
Investments come.
Yeah.
They just led the way for so long.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're a US fan, so saying not to worry probably isn't what you want to hear if you're not a fan. But don't worry. As Kosovar Arslani said, don't bitch about the US or say not nice things about them. They will absolutely be back. Anything else you
want
to touch on?
Did we agree with the top three players? It was the right winner. Diana Bonmatí. I mean, what a year she's had. Absolutely sensational. I think I described it as one of life's biggest joys is watching her play football. I absolutely adore watching her play. She's absolute magic. And you think what she's achieved this year. There's like, there can be no question about
who won
about that.
Yeah. I was maybe a little surprised to see come on in there.
But, yeah.
But it was the same with the top three players, I thought, at the World Cup. I don't know why Jenny Hermoso was involved in that, to be totally honest. And I think sometimes in those situations they'll just pick players that are in the teams that are still around, which is kind of annoying. But I also think if that's what you're going to do, you absolutely should have picked one of the either Jess Carter or Alex Greenwood, I think, for that bronze boot. No, we're not doing favourite WSL signing yet. No, that's going to be in our next live before the season starts. This is definitely World Cup focused. But it's really hard to be World Cup focused when the WSL is creeping up around the corner.
Yeah, it's trying to shift the focus back to the domestic. But, you know, we have an international window in about 3 weeks' time, which is absolutely insane. I can't understand why it's come around so quick. But, yeah, Nations League kicks off at the end of September, well, 22nd of September. It's come around really quick.
Another new challenge. Yeah, and we're heading to Ireland next week for a few weeks to see my family. And we're going to try and do a league game over there. And we're going to do Ireland, Northern Ireland, in the Aviva Stadium, which we're very excited about.
And then we'll be at England.
We'll be at the England game as well.
Someone asked about New Zealand. We did. We went to Auckland for the first semi-final, Spain-Sweden.
Mm-hmm. We also did the South Island.
Yeah, so we did. That was non-football related. But for the Auckland, we loved Auckland. It was great. The fan fest there was
huge, and indoors.
Huge, indoors, incredible.
Where are you hoping the next World Cup is? South America?
I want it to be in Brazil. Like, all of the countries that have bid are great, but I've never been to Brazil. Yeah, I really, really, really want to go to Brazil.
It's a really fun way to see a country, is a tournament.
And I think Brazil, like, where they are with women's football and the structures that they have in place over there, you know, they've got all of the stadia pretty much built already. It wouldn't take a lot to get them up to, I think they have got another international competition as well to use them. So I think it would be a really cool place to have women's football.
And I think that's probably a good place to
end. Can I come with you?
Maybe. You never know. By the next World Cup, we could be more than two girls on a ball. But, you know, that's a while away yet. That's 4 years away yet. And we have a couple of major tournaments to do before then. But thank you for joining us.
We will be back
and helping us wrap up our World Cup. I know it feels like ages ago, but we've only just gotten back. We will be back. We will do a live probably, I'd say, like a week before the WSL starts, just so we can catch up on the news and preview what's to come for what will be no doubt another very exciting
season. And then we will
season.
Be looking to do them regularly.
We will. Oh, actually, while we have you, we're thinking of doing stuff regularly. We're thinking of maybe doing more regular podcasts. If you enjoyed, remember the podcast at the beginning, if you listened to G'day from GOTB, and the first one was in a cupboard because I was so worried about sound. And then within a couple of episodes, we were doing them from airports and cafes, and I'd completely lost any concern about sound. Let us know what vibe you like. Do you like feeling like you're on the road with us? Like you're there with us? Do you like it to be more like studio based and, you know, cautious about sound? Or do you like a little bit of a mixture of both? We'd love to hear from you. And we will try and adjust our content accordingly for the new season. See you all soon, guys.